Me too. Okay, it's time for us to get started. If everybody wants to have a seat. I want to welcome you all here tonight. This is a nice crowd. Thank you for coming. We start our meetings with an invocation and a flag salute. So if you want to join us, go ahead.
Let's pray, please. Father God in heaven, we thank you for the privilege of coming to this place and considering the things that should come before this board. And I ask that you help us make good decisions, that you guide us. Give us your wisdom and help us as we go through this meeting. Father, I thank you for the priceless gift of Jesus, for our help, and for our life, and for living in this place. In his name, amen.
Amen.
Salute. Pledge. Let the salute of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Since we have such a crowd today, we're going to begin the meeting with the opportunity for public comment. You're limited to 3 minutes, I think. I don't know how many. Four of you signed up to speak first, so we'll start there. And then if anybody else wants to speak, you're more than welcome. Alan McClure.
So the principle is, if I just go from here?
Sure.
Is that good?
Sure.
All right.
And Alan, you speak up, but for the rest of y'all, I'm going to pass the mic around just so that we can hear it on our recorder. So
well, I'm a fairly loud speaker, so. Listen to that. Otherwise, I'm afraid I'll be booming alone. Okay, good evening. I'm Alan McClung, a full-time resident at 281 Mill Cove Road. I have concerns to share about the impact of the proposed construction on the flooding that annually occurs at Route 276 and Flint Bucky Mountain Road. Halted Creek, an environmentally protected stream, runs through Mill Cove, under Becky Mountain Road, through a cornfield and into the French Broad River. FEMA has designated large portions of the pasture and adjoining the cornfields as a high-risk AE floodplain because it becomes a lake-size water course during heavy rains. When 276 was built, the highway was raised out of the original floodplain. By creating a levee, the floodplain was divided. A two-hole conduit is the creek's only escape. And when the French Broad swells, the water course is forced to push into the cornfields and Mill Cove, typically crossing Becky Mountain Road. The pictures provided tonight serve as demonstrative proof. We confidently contend that building in this floodplain will violate the Transylvania County Flood Damage Prevention Ordinance. Please follow my logic. Continued flooding is inevitable. Construction changes where water can go. Redirected floodwaters that block Becky Mountain Road will restrict emergency services. This is a violation of the flood ordinance. Now a dirt bank, the 2019 flood brought down two huge creekside trees at our road entrance. Increased flood levels will intensify the destructive erosion effects in Mill Cove, another ordinance violation. A flooded underwater septic tank will not operate as designed, an additional violation of the flood ordinance. The county's flood ordinance offers a variety of gray areas from which the floodplain administrators get to choose. We know that it's impossible for any developer to guarantee that the floodwaters will not be redirected. We know that there will be increased flood erosion. And we know with absolute certainty that a septic field will not perk underwater. As our appointed land use stewards, we ardently request that you choose to deny any construction in this floodplain. Before regrettable decisions are made, we urge you to choose a moratorium on all floodplain construction. Time is needed to make informed choices that are based on a thorough and thoughtful examination of the facts. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. That was exactly 3 minutes. Christy Blakely. Okay, all right. John Corey? Am I pronouncing that right? Okay.
Yes.
There's a, yeah.
Did you come up?
Oh, no, that's okay. I'll know if you have some notes that I can.
Okay.
Good evening. My name's John Corey. I'm a resident on 245 Hawkshead Road, and I'm here to speak about the same thing that Alan spoke about, which was this the proposed development at 276 and Bethany Mountain Road. You know, my comments aren't related to zoning or land use or area planning. And like Alan's, they're mostly related to flood issues. You know, we all love living in the land of waterfalls and our temperate rainforests, which actually means that we sometimes live in a land of situational flooding. And the site in question does flood with frequency, and it, just in 2019 and 2018, it floods to varying extents, some pretty severe, actually every quarter. The proposed development will fill a portion, it'll fill the portion between Hawkshead Creek, 276, and Becky Mountain Road to elevate the finished floor of this building to above the base flood elevation. By doing that, that's going to displace a lot of the flood area that would normally have been there, but they're kind of compounding their issues by filling in about two-thirds of the site, blocking off a relief drain, which is on the north side of the site. It's going to result in the, it will result in more flooding onto the other side of Hawkshead Creek and also up Middle Cove. And, you know, we don't know because they're also, one of the compounding actions is that they're replacing what is a cornfield with impervious area. So roughly 9,100 square feet of roof area. I didn't do an area take off of the parking lot, but the park, my guess is it's somewhere around 14,000 square feet at least of impervious area that's actually going to be adding to the volume that's going into Hawkshead Creek. And I know there's no stormwater ordinance there, but really what we're talking about is our floodwaters at that point. And as has been stated, the flood hazard ordinance is in place to protect the county's management of access, the roads, and also private property. And to have any sort of meaningful management, in my layman's view of how to address this, I mean, we all, you know, they're trying to do this development by the rules. Really what I'm asking is that the county use the ordinance and use all the provisions within the ordinance to leverage the outside oversight agencies so all the reviews can take place. You know, just my quick assessment of it is that when you displace all that capacity of raising that, raising the finished floor, you're going to have to increase the flow through capacity under 276, you know, from that floodplain out to the East Fork. And that shouldn't be on the county's dime. That should be on the developer's dime. So, out of time.
Thank you, Ms. Gordon. Thank you. Sasha Jones. speaking to you tonight as a mother of three young children that lives on Becky Mountain Road, and as someone who drives by the proposed site 6 to 8 times a day. As someone who chose to own a home here because I believe the Transylvania County Planning Department has its residents' safety in mind when reviewing permit applications, particularly when it involves a project that will increase flooding on Becky Mountain Road, a road the county owns. And to that point, we have over 6,000 signatures on our petition showing that those folks feel the same way. I took this picture here, this top picture here. I took that picture when I had to meet my babysitter one of several times at the bottom of Becky Mountain Road because of the flooding. She couldn't make it up to our driveway. And I request that the Army Corps of Engineers, I request that they have the opportunity to weigh in on whether they require a 404 permit. The question is straightforward. We assert that the property has wetlands on it based on soil and hydrology, and we need a jurisdictional wetland determination. Initiate the process for the 09 TEO map to be evaluated and updated. We have ample justification from all our dated flood pictures alone that FEMA established base flood elevation is outdated. The county does have the power to ask FEMA to reassess this site. We are showing you actual conditions on the ground at the most local level with all of our pictures. There is ample justification for you to make this request. I think it's a significant disservice to this community and a conflict of interest to not have an independent engineer review the plans, but rather you rely on the out-of-state permit applicant's own engineer to get it right. Your job is not to rubber stamp a permit, but to consider whether all aspects of this project have been reviewed properly and are in agreement with your own published flood damage prevention ordinance. Isn't this the point of a permitting process? Bottom line, I really feel like your hands are not tied and the window is not closed. We have confidence in all of you to use the tools that you do have to make the best planning decisions in concert with the specific resources, regional, state, and federal, that we suggested. Thank you for your time and for your service to our county.
Would someone else like to speak tonight? Just state your name, please.
Hi, good evening. My name is Rockwell. My husband and I live on top of Echo Mountain. The Level Mercado is a Dollar General Corporation. Excuse me. I need eyeballs for this. Level Mercado, Dollar General Corporation, targets small rural communities like ours because of our lax zoning and ordinances. These developers are adept at flying in under the radar and getting projects like this started quickly, leaving the community to play catch up. And right now, one of the most beloved and scenic parts of the 276 corridor is in their crosshairs. From the time that we all found out about this project, it has been a steep learning curve for everyone, but we have dug deep, we've examined the scope of the project and its impact, and we have questions. How can our county have a floodplain protection ordinance that restricts what type of development can be done in a 100-year floodplain and is in place presumably to protect the neighbors from backup floodwater and debris, but allow a project like this with a 9,100 square foot building and a parking lot on over an acre of this floodplain? The proposed building would be raised up several feet above the floodplain, creating an island in the middle of a flood basin, which would only make more flooding and a flood-prone area even worse, and compromise the safety and the property of the neighboring community. How can we have a farmland protection plan but still allow this 3-acre parcel that has been farmed for years and years to be destroyed? The county's own farmland protection plan goes to great lengths to outline the benefits of farmland protection and the detriments of permanent loss of farmland. Even though the plan is not an enforceable ordinance per se, it is meant as a guiding principle for the county, and in no way does the plan even suggest supporting converting farmlands to commercial retail stores. How can we say with a straight face that we value our environment, but let this project go forward with any leniency, knowing that the runoff from the building, the loading dock, the trash bin, the toxic chemicals left behind from the cars will all flow into the protected trout watershed of Hobson Creek and its conformance with the French Broad River adjacent to the site? The immediate question is, what can be done to stop this particular project within the laws, ordinances, and agency oversight that already exists? But the bigger question and ongoing discussion is, how can the county fix what I believe is a flawed system so that it can operate from a position of strength, stay true to our community values, and protect what we love for generations to come? To paraphrase Senator Joni Mitchell, if we don't act now, one day, it's going to be our kids and grandkids looking around and asking, why did they pave paradise and put up a parking lot? Yeah.
I got that song stuck in my head.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Thompson and I live in Cedar Mountain. I've lived in Transylvania County since 2012, but I've been coming here my entire life because my grandparents were here. In fact, my mother grew up on Island Court Road in the Dunsrock community. I'm actually going to ask you to put a moratorium on all outside corporate box stores while we give the small communities a chance to develop a sustainable, thoughtful, and inclusive plan for this county's growth, especially in the rural areas. I'm actually going to speak to you today about protecting livelihoods. If you start at Wilson Road and you make your way all the way to the state line, you'll find a variety of retail, construction, artisan, repair, and service businesses. They don't necessarily stand out, some do. They just belong on the landscape. And I'd like to highlight three. The Whistle Stop, what was Cedar Mountain Quick Stops, and Creekside. All three of these businesses have the convenience items that people seem to say they want and need so they don't have to drive to town. And those establishments have all price points, from your basic bread to locally handcrafted artisan breads, sealed chest milk to small batch local milk in glass jars. When people said they needed to save gas, I said they go to one of those stores. But that didn't happen when Dollar General opened, the one on Seahawk. One of these three businesses I mentioned lost more than $30,000 in revenue the first full year that Dollar General was open. $30,000. Then, all three had to stop carrying those items because they were rotting on the shelves, expiring. Two of the businesses had to really rethink their business plan and then what to offer to the community. The Quick Stop was sold and is now an outpost. They have almost completely eliminated convenience items. Do we really want to force our established local businesses to have to continue to rethink their business plan every time a Dollar General or some other box store shows up to this county? I feel like we as a community, as a county, have failed these businesses. If we allow another one to open, and another one, you know they're talking about putting one on Crab Creek near DuPont, we will hear about businesses going under. And don't forget that those businesses employ people. Way more people than all the Dollar Generals combined in this county. And they also pay more. Is that what we want for people who are from here or have chosen to be here, who have poured blood, sweat, tears, and money into their businesses? We owe it to them to put a moratorium on all outsider corporate box stores while we give the small communities a chance to develop a sustainable, thoughtful, and inclusive plan for this county's growth, especially in rural areas. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Hi, I'm Martha Bridges, and I have a home at 184 Nottingham Road in Sherwood Forest, and we are part-time residents, but very happy residents when we can be here in the park. My only other time to attend a planning commission meeting was when the first Dollar General decided to spring up, and our community was very concerned and upset about that. And I know that for you, coming out for this meeting night after night, month after month, it is something that you probably don't feel very much appreciated for when you get community response that sounds critical. We do not mean to be critical of your service. We appreciate it very much and hope that we can influence you to do the things that will meet our point of view. I think the people who have spoken before me have been very eloquent about the things that need to be considered here. In that earlier meeting a couple of years ago, I heard a couple of you express concerns about property owners' rights and property values. And I know that that has to be a concern for the planning board, because people who own property want the right to sell that property when they need to and if the right price comes along. But for all of us who own property in this area, we know that our property values are heavily dependent on the beauty of the area, the forest that we have, the mountain highway that comes down from Caesar's Head. And we would like to be sure that the planning board tries to be aware of the rustic and scenic value of that for all of our property values. A place like Uncle Buck's is not necessarily what we would call polished and beautiful, those of you who have been here that long, but it fits, as does the Whistle Stop, and all of these places are really important to maintaining that. And I know that we have a designation for Highway 276 as one of the scenic highways, but we, from what I understand, we have not met or have not applied for a higher status than that gives you more strength in limiting what comes there. That's what I'd like to see us pursue. An outfit like Dollar General does have the option to build a different looking box store. They have one in Banner Elk, North Carolina, because they were forced to meet zoning requirements there. We didn't interfere with anybody's right to sell property to Dollar General. I just meant that the building that they built was much more in harmony with the community itself. Most of those corporations can do that sort of thing, and I would just like for the board to take those kinds of things into account as we try to work with us on this situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Martha. Nick Friesen, want to speak?
I was going to talk about one thing with the
yeah.
Is this on?
Mm-hmm.
So I have the Duck Pond Pottery, which is kitty corner to the proposed site location. I have Duck Pond Pottery on 276. Across the street from Becky Mountain Road, and I have a 20-year vantage point of the area that's being proposed. I'm kind of up higher. If I'm standing in my parking lot this time of year, I can look to the right, and I can see the entire floodway on the other side of the river. And then if I look down 276, I've got a great view of the fields below me. And I've been watching this every day for 20 years. And I have a question. I don't expect anybody here to answer it directly, but it's a question that has been in my head since this started, and that's the distinction between floodway and floodplain in this situation. The fields on the other side of the river from me are floodway. Those go underwater anytime we have more than a 5-inch rain event in 24 hours. Sometimes it goes many feet underwater, the entire field. And this is a much bigger parcel of land than what we're talking about on the other side of 276 where the construction is. So when I stand on the left and I look down 276, what I'm looking at there is essentially a land bridge, a causeway, a man-made straight shot going over a wetland. And the land on the right of the road towards the French Broad River is designated as floodway, whereas the land on the left, where they proposed to build the Dollar General, is called 100-year floodplain. We need to get rid of that word, 100-year floodplain, because everyone knows around here that's ridiculous and floods all the time. But my question is, why is it an arbitrary designation of that area where the Dollar General is proposed to be built? Is it an arbitrary designation that's considered floodplain and not floodway? Because I guarantee you, it's the same exact elevation. The only distinction is that they put a highway down the middle. Now, if that's the case, I'm just wondering, what would there be some kind of a precedent where if I own the land on the other side of my shop, it's all floodway? Could I just build a road down the middle of it, just a road to nowhere, to divide the property to say, okay, this is floodway now, everything on the other side is floodplain? That's I would like to have that answered in this process, because I think there's something that really addresses the critical part of this whole question, if we get an answer on that. Okay.
Thank you. Carol Dodson signed up next.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, you go ahead. Yeah.
I believe I can explain what he's looking for.
Okay.
All floodplains have floodways, and all floodplains have flood fringes. The sum of the fringe, the floodway, which includes the channel, the other side of the river, the floodway, and the flood fringe from edge to edge is all the 100-year floodplain. A 100-year storm in Transylvania County, of which there is a 1% chance in any given day during any year, is 11 to 13 inches of rainfall in 24 hours. That is the standard for a 100-year flood. Now, if we get 11 to 13 inches of rain in 6 hours, we may have gotten the same volume of rain, but it may have rained at the rate of a 500-year storm. Or, if in 2004, when Hurricane Francis came through here, we had 17 inches of rain, but that was over 36 hours. So the rainfall and the resultant runoff all change relative to the time span and a thing called time of concentration, where the water from up here comes down here. Now, the flood fringe, if I understand the floodplain ordinance correctly, and I used to work with it in this county an awful lot with farmers when I was with NRCS, the flood fringe, the way this is written, there is a certain amount of what I call mooching in towards the floodway, such that the volume of water displaced by filling either in this flood fringe or this flood fringe or both of them together will not cause the water to rise more than one vertical foot in the floodway. Now, the difference between the flood plain and the floodway is the floodway is absolutely required volume and surface area to carry the runoff of a 100-year 11 to 13 inch rainfall in 24 hours. That's the standard. So that's why part of it is named fringe and part of it is named floodway. The current cross section at this particular site is labeled AE, which is the 100-year floodplain. The causeway effect of Highway 276 that bisects those four fields right through there, there is enough, according to FEMA, there is enough room from that causeway to the river, and over on the other side, over on Jack Tabor's property over there, for the floodway to still continue to carry the 100-year runoff, even though the causeway is there. Now, if the causeway was not there, does that mean that the floodway might be a little bit wider? That's a possibility. I'll give you another example. Down here at Pisgah Forest, how many of you in this room remember where the Acusta Lagoon is? Used to be cropland.
Nope.
That used to be cropland that where gladiolas and corn and other crops were raised for many, many years. Acusta, and I'm not being critical of them, but you say it like it is. Acusta built a 60-acre lagoon down there. That 60-acre lagoon displaced a certain volume of water. Why do you think Pisgah Forest floods so bad now? But nobody said anything about it because that lagoon was necessary to keep the business in operation where three generations of Transylvania County families worked. Another example, and it doesn't get any better than this, the causeway across the French Frog River on Everett Road. When you go down Old 64 and turn on Everett Road at the power substation, right before you get to the bridge, there's a big blowout on the left-hand side. How many of you know what caused that? The 100-year flood in 1964 overtopped that causeway. When they built that causeway that goes from the substation to the radio tower antenna out there, the only surface area for all of that floodwater upstream to pass was under that highway bridge. There was more water than what could be carried under the bridge. It overtopped the highway. And there was about a 45-foot gap between the end of the bridge and the causeway where it was washed all the way down to ground level. And that big blowout that you see immediately on your left as you approach that bridge is still there today because of the tremendous force of the water that blew all that soil out in a 100-year flood. So that's what happens when you mooch in on the floodplain. I'm almost done. I don't want to take all of your all's time.
Well, this is very interesting, though.
But the thing about it is, it doesn't matter whether it's the floodway or the flood fringe. If you take a pan of water and set a brick in it, that brick displaces a certain volume of water, correct?
Yep.
The footprint of that store and everything around it will displace floodwater.
Yeah.
Now, that floodwater may only be 2, 3, or 4 feet deep, but over how much surface area? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it is not possible for this magical engineering term to have compensatory storage in a floodplain. Where are you going to store it in a floodplain? It's already flooded. There's nowhere to put it. Therefore, the water has to go somewhere. And another thing that really complicates this problem is you've got two floodplains that come together right at the causeway. You've got the Hogshead Creek floodplain, which is in and of itself, and you've got the French Frog floodplain together. And where the two come together, who knows how high the water is going to get. And let me point out one last thing.
He promises.
This will be the last one. All of the flood insurance rate maps that show that base flood elevation for the 100-year flood are based on a very critical assumption that the channel remains open, there's no landslides, there's no debris slides into the water, there's no jammed bridges, there's no jammed culverts. But you get an outbuilding that washes up against the bridge and closes off one-third of the surface area of that bridge. Folks, let me tell you, all bets are off on how the water goes in. Because they can't calculate that. All they can calculate is the surface area as it is at the time the survey was done. Now I'm done.
One thing I would add about the highway, the highway's been there a long time. I think it was there long before
frankly, there was any concern about floodways and floodplains, and probably not any designation as such.
Nobody worried about
Nobody
it.
Nobody worried about it.
But did they raise it up at some point?
Sorry?
Did they raise it up at some point? Raise up about 50 years ago.
Well, I guess they could.
Well, they did. They had to raise it in order to keep it travelable, if that's a word, above the 100-year base flood elevation. But that came at a cost, because you cannot put enough culverts under that highway to carry the 100-year flood.
There's only one culvert with two holes.
And that's why the water backs up to Mill Creek.
That's right.
Because Mill Creek can't flow into the French Broad River at flood stage, so it mooches further upstream.
Right. That's true in many places.
And I'm a little concerned about, I mean, I'm talking as a citizen right now, not the planning board.
Really?
Where are they going to Where are you going to put the septic field for that? The last time I checked with the Environmental Health Department, you can't put septic tanks and drain fields in a floodplain. It's already got a high water table.
That's correct.
You good? Okay, Mac, Morrow.
Thanks, Bob, for that nice class. It is Christmas season, and why I'm here. That's why I'm here. I've got my own Christmas list for you guys, too. So. But this topic has been in my family for the last few weeks, I'm sure, and all of our families is why we're here. And so tonight, what I'd like to do is share an email, because I have a couple of things I want to ask you on your list to think about. And so I'd like to share my email between ask our farm expert or our renter. Shared an email about the topic of saving farmland, because for me this is a big deal. And so if you permit, let me do that. But I'll say, walking in tonight, I'm just so appreciative for what is this whole conversation, because when you think about Mill Cove, you don't realize that's a 1,000-acre reserve that has been protected for over 100 years. For families that have, Mecklenburg, which is part of who we are, have been there and saved this land, it is very special to those of us in Dundrop. I'm just thankful that Phil McGavin isn't alive today. This is an email to Bart. Bart. Not sure you're familiar with the term tragedy of the commons. It's a concept from an 1833 economist. But last week, in an exchange with my sister about Hodges Creek, it popped to the surface. I'm using the term commons as it refers to any shared and unregulated resource, such as rivers, river bottoms, especially when environmental protection concerns are raised by the community. The current no-dollar and the hollow challenge reminded me that we need a better farmland protection discussion. I'm distressed about this project for several reasons, but foremost is the fact that this land is currently in active agriculture, has the benefit of tax discounts, and is downstream of a 1,000-acre preserve with incredible environmental value, and will allow urban sprawl at the expense of this environmental legacy. Our sense of place and appreciation for rural character is threatened, but the loss of agricultural land says a lot about what we consider important. We talk about property or owner rights, but not about land use. Transylvania County's planner is in his new position. My hope is he will understand his responsibility to his public, who deserve more, and will educate his superiors to their options. Public stewardship is an educational process. Other counties are ahead of us, but in your professional capacity, do you have any suggestions as to who should take the lead? The answer. Amen. Thank you for including me in the conversation. I'll note that the Ag Advisory Board did write a farmland protection plan for our county. This plan is already 10 years old, but many of the concerns and proposed solutions are still in effect today. One possibility would be greater awareness of our county's voluntary ag district program. The ordinance around this program was rewritten in 2018 so it could be more inclusive to smaller farms. And in addition, it is voluntary, so it does not carry the permanence that can make other conservation easements seem too risky for some farmers. I think that many of us come back to the fact that profitable farmland is resilient, sustainable farmland. Extension has been working closely with our local farms to make them as profitable and resilient as possible. But our farmers are subject to the national and international market trends that do not favor small farms. Our local farmers market is another avenue that has aided in farm profitability. But as someone interested in the long-term future of the county, I agree it would be nice if we had a solid plan allowing businesses to come into this county without disrupting its heritage and threatening our ability to feed ourselves. I'm happy to be of service and know where that's got me. I share that with you because I think I have three things on my list. Please look for ways to protect farmland from commercial use. Look for ways to protect scenic corridors. And look for ways to enhance floodplain ordinance. I'd like to see you consider even adopting what we did in Brevard with the 2 foot three boards and no adverse impact statements. Thank you very much, and I wish you all a very, very Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Veronica Morrow. Robin McCain.
Sorry, I thought it was Simon from here.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, anybody else that would like to speak?
Carol,
want you to know the speaker? Oh,
are you going to talk? I just want to introduce myself. My name is Pamela Bode, and I'm relatively new to your community. I've lived here about 2.5 years. I come from Louisiana, and I'm a victim of a flood, much like has been expressed by my fellow community members. I've lived in a home in Louisiana for 25 years, and one night at 1 o'clock in the morning, the water came in. Kept rising. I ended up with 6 feet of water in my home due to continuing development in that area. I bought a home here, and my friends back in Louisiana asked, "Did you check the flood elevation?" I said, "Well, bought a home on the top of a knoll. And if my home floods, then I'll be shaking those hands grows by." And I started a business right down the road from this place Art Brevard. And I'm starting it to support local artisans. And while I am extremely concerned about the visual impact of Dollar General, and while I'm extremely concerned about the economic impact of Dollar General upon other local businesses, I don't feel like it will impact mine, but my concern is a larger concern for my new community. I implore you, do the right thing, because you're looking in the eyes of someone that has, I'm a survivor, and it was not easy to live through that flood. And if we fast forward to a few years down the line and you allow this development, you will have your local citizens, like me, who have survived the flood, standing here asking you, why didn't we do something different? Thank you.
Somebody else that wants to speak? Yes, sir.
I want to make 2 points. One is...
Your name, please, sir.
I'm Carol Parker.
Okay.
hate to say this, but I believe in global warming, partly because I'm a farmer and I see the difference in our crops and the crops we can have because it's raining too much. Read a scientific article that's talking about our problems with planting. Made a point that we're using data from the past, not data from the future that we see happening now. That we, this particular article said that we had 3 500-year floods in 1 year, and that was throughout the United States. So, are we planning for the future when we get permits to build in the floodplain? That may be the wrong thing to do. The other thing I'm concerned about, too, for those of us who drive down 276 very regularly, probably have the occasion to have somebody passing us at 70, 75 miles an hour because they want to get up the mountain ahead of us. It's an accelerator lane. I think the lack of a turning lane, an extra lane put in there, I just want to accelerate accidents. We're not talking about safety. We're assuming that the two-lane road can handle the turns. And nobody has told me if they, in doing the permitting, if they actually have to look about our bicycle industry. The number of bicyclists that use that road, are we considering their safety? They're part of our industry in this community now. So there's two things that I'd like to look into. I wish we could go back and get a new traffic count in the summer and also try somehow or another to look at the value of the safety for our bicycle riders. We hear complaints all the time about not being able to pass them and so forth. But I really think we need a turn lane for this if it goes through. The other thing that concerns me, if they meet all of our present codes, they're not liable for the future. So what happens if it proves that it's going to be more flooding and more damage, who's going to pay for the change in that road? It won't be them, it will be us. A 100-year flood is not an adequate criteria for permitting. We need to think about the future, not the past, with a 100-year flood, in my opinion.
Thank you. Is there somebody else that would like to speak right at this time?
Hi. My name is Simon Molinas. I'm a very, very recent renter out here in Brevard. I live on Ringley Road. And I just wanted to point out a couple things that I've noticed about this. Today actually was the first day that I heard about the Dollar General being put in place. And a couple things that I wanted to point out was one thing. I hear of people saying that this is a part-time location, that they come here for the beauty and the landscape of Brevard, and that's a lot of our tourism that comes in here, a lot of our money, our income for local businesses. And I disagree with adding another, like you said, box shop in here, and also you know, giving people a reason to come back in the tourism season. If everything was the same as everywhere else, then there's nowhere else to go. So also another suggestion, obviously, because where you guys are trying to locate it is in a flood zone or floodplain or flood fringe. not the best place to put it. Why not look at places that businesses have gone down and there's empty shop locations or empty places to lease or other better places where there's more shopping centers around? I don't necessarily think that's the best option, but it's better than putting it where you're going to be talking about. That's pretty much it.
Thank you. Anybody else? Sure.
Hi, Joe Mayor, Representative Brevard. I have a question also about the placement of the Dollar General, as in toxic runoff from the business itself and vehicles in the parking lot, you know, antifreeze, oil, gasoline, flooding into the floodplain when it rains through the market flood situation. And also, how and where are the semi-trucks that are going to supply the Dollar General, how are they going to maneuver off the picking on the road? It seems like that doesn't seem as possible, and that could back up traffic and cause more grief and accidents on that 276 making that kind of turn for those vehicles. That's all.
Let me see your picture again.
Anybody else?
Sandy?
Yes.
Let me ask just one thing.
Okay, put the box down.
Do you realize why a lot of this is happening? About 67% or thereabouts of this county is state and federal land.
Yep.
So that's out off limits. The French Broad River floodplain is plus 10,000 acres or more in size that's off limits, for the most part, except for what we're dealing with. So what's left? The mountainsides on that are not state and federal land are so steep that you can't build on them, there's landslide issues, and how are you going to put a septic field on a slope like that? So what remains is a small slither or percentage of land, and this county's got 243,283 acres, and that's what there is. And it's all being parceled out based on state, federal ownership, private, and floodplain. Now, years ago, it became an obvious fact that in time we would lose our two biggest industries, which were the tax base, and people can call it what you want, but if it wasn't for Acosta and DuPont, this county wouldn't have been where it was. That tax base is forever gone, because we're never going to have a factory like that in here again. We don't have anything to offer them. No county water, there's no county sewer, there's no land big enough now to put a factory like that. And why would a factory come here? Because we're too far away from the interstates and so forth and so on. So that's why so much emphasis on recreation and retirement in this county. But the other side of the coin is there's only a finite acreage that's left. And now they're going to try to start developing those fringes. It's like Mike Mara said in the back, the city decided to go with a 2-foot freeboard. And when you raise 2 feet of water over quite a large acreage of land from fringe to fringe, that protects a lot of land.
Thanks, Mara.
Sandy, I'd like to just the public comments are through at this point. I just want to say thanks for all of you all coming out and for your concern and care for our community, for the environment as a whole, which is where it sounds like I hear. I know that a lot of you have concerns of the visual and all that, but it sounds like everybody's focusing on the environment, which is, we can't go back and change that. We have done plenty of damage to it. I think we're realizing a lot of that and trying not to make those mistakes again. So I would say thank you for your concern. And I would beg Jason to correct me if I say anything wrong here, but I also want to clarify some encouragement to you guys in going forward and helping how you can help us as a planning board. As the county planning board, we really have nothing to do with this permit being passed or not being passed. What we do have to do with is the review of ordinances, zoning, land use development, or land use regulation, and then small area planning, which, and those are all kind of different levels of regulating the uses of land, which is what the big issue is here. I mean, I think that's what it really is. So it's pretty obvious to me that we as a planning board need to reevaluate some of these things, and as a community, we're going to need your support. If, be it that this Dollar General gets built or does not get built, I would encourage you guys to continue. I mean, I can't believe that you just heard today, right, or yesterday, that there was a Dollar General. Before you said that, in my thanking you all for coming out and for your concern, I was going to say that I guarantee you that your all's passion has made it such that there's not a single person in Transylvania County that is not aware of this. I mean, you guys have done an amazing job.
He's the only one.
Yeah, you've done an amazing job of spreading the word, and it's going to be just as important as we talk about redoing ordinances or land use regulation or zoning, that you help spread that word and help educate people, because you guys have done a ton of research, and that's obvious, and then helping, because everybody in the county can't get here, you know, and so help out with that. Don't lose this momentum and this steam that you've built up. Don't stop it with this Dollar General. Because we obviously, it seems as a county, as we've grown, as we have attracted more people, with more people, it attracts businesses to want to be here, and so we need to figure out how we're going to deal with that. So we need your help to do that as well.
Sorry. John, I wanted to make one comment, just what you said and what you referred to, and that is, when you put a building in, if the floodplain is really, really massive, where there's more space for the water than to move out and not interfere with adding additional flooding like it would for us to come back across Becky Mountain Road. So it seems to me that there could be places in floodplains that putting the brick down does not really affect other places that we live and that we drive and that we even see. Those the apartments right here on the edge as we're going out, that was part of the floodplain, and they built that all up. But all that water has been pushed away that we don't really notice it, because it's such a large plane that it pans out, and it doesn't seem, that I'm aware of, that it's created additional flooding. So I'm thinking there are some of the floodplains that are more accessible, whereas places like this is just not accessible. It creates too much of a burden.
And the more that when you displace water, two things happen. It goes somewhere else and it accelerates, because the same volume of water has to go through the same opening.
That's right.
And so acceleration with silty, sandy soils causes more erosion, more siltation, more sedimentation. I mean, it's a double-edged sword.
Well, I would say no, but I'm trying to find that compromise and say some may be more accessible than others. And this is not one of the others.
I would like to add one thing, and I hope everybody realizes this, that land use regulations within the county, there's not a whole lot of them, and there's no zoning within the county. So that is, in a situation like this, I'll go out on a limb and say it's a problem, because there really isn't any way except for breaching the floodplain regulations that we can say, don't do this.
Well, I think that's the point. It does breach.
Now, one solution would be is to have some zoning, and I think when you start to do that, You need to have a fast car available outside, because it's not going to be met with a lot of good things to be done and said. So we need to think about that. We got to keep that in mind, that we have a lot of people who want no part of zoning or land use. There's a very distinct attitude in this county. It's my land, I'll do with it what I want.
And maybe that's where the Dollar General should be put.
And that's where you really are on the Dollar General thing. Somebody wants to sell that land. And
but there are buyers behind that. All they have to do is get out of that contract.
Yeah, there are some problems there. I've been out there and looked. Well, I didn't really have to go look at it, but I did.
But there are buyers right there to pick it up.
Yeah, and there will be some problems. There's no question about it.
Even if we'd have had zoning, now think about this. Now zoning's the other side of the double-edged sword.
Yes, it is.
If that had, let's just assume that that had been zoned, mixed commercial or mixed industrial or something. They could have put the store in anyway.
Right.
What if it had been zoned residential? All they got to do is petition to have the zoning changed, which may or may not happen. If the zoning was changed, they still put it in. So that's why a lot of us in this county have the idea that no zoning and good education and common sense goes a lot farther than a regulation. Because if it had been zoned, then you wouldn't have a leg to stand on about it, hardly.
That's true.
That's but where's the part?
Just offering more money.
Let me tell you one thing before I get away from it. I was born in this county. I've been here a long time. I've seen a lot of changes. I was a little boy. I watched the Coosa built. Unfortunately, I saw it torn down.
Jason, can you, the moratorium that somebody mentioned on outside box stores?
No, not possible.
I just mentioning that, I have not heard of that idea. What is that?
That's in place in some places.
There's some legal considerations that our county attorney would have to advise us on. I know it is in place in some places, but as far as the specifics, I'm not up to speed on those. But okay. You know, it is a tool, but it's a double-edged sword as well.
Okay.
There are places where that's in effect, no question.
Asheville has a hotel moratorium in place for next year.
There's very specific standards of what you can and can't do with it, and time limitations and all that.
And I would add to this conversation that in this particular location is a Transylvania County Scenic Border designation. And right now, that scenic border, the only real rules applying to it is about signage.
Correct.
And I think if there is ever a case where you could really look at a land use ordinance, it would be in a Transylvania County scenic corridor. So that might be a good place to kind of start looking at this problem. Because this is a problem. I mean, the county is growing, people are coming, and we can't continually turn a blind eye to it.
I lived all my life where there was all kinds of zoning. And in one particular area I'm familiar with, there are no chain stores allowed, period. Not even a 7-Eleven. They're able to.
Let's do that.
Well, there's some drawbacks to living there, though, I can tell you that.
Yes, ma'am. This is a question. What would be the procedure for getting a higher designation on the scenic corridor or for getting a moratorium on the big box? I mean, what could happen? If you wanted to start doing something like that tonight, how would you go?
Well, it would be something the county commissioners would ask us to do.
So we should bummer again.
I think we did, right? The last meeting.
Have they spoken to you, county commissioners?
Have they said anything to you, John?
Have you had conversations with them?
I haven't spoken directly with the commissioners. I do speak with the county manager, and they have been. There has been some discussions on how a moratorium potentially would work, but as far as the specifics, I'm not aware of those off the top of my head.
I doubt there'll be.
I've reached out to the commissioners about it and about this whole situation and what their thoughts are.
Yes.
Well, we're hoping that they're communicating with everyone so that we're all on the same page with information.
What I would like to say, just really quick, last year when the first Dollar General went up on 276, the citizens worked together with them. You know, it wasn't in a floodplain. I mean, it wasn't something they were happy about seeing come to 276, but working with them, Dollar General was more than happy to cooperate so that their building fit the area. Now, I know that did not happen in Coxaway, and there you get that box, ugly thing. I have only known about this for a little over a week. I've been busy time of year. But the first thing I thought of is, why did they want to put in another Dollar General just a few miles up the road? I don't understand that. I don't know how many the county has already. Does anybody know? So this would be 7?
That's 1 per 5,000 people.
Is that their policy?
Yes. Yeah. And they want to build more than that. They just
want to
keep building.
That's the first thing that jumps out at me. And we have members of the board that know this county inside out and upside down, and they know a lot more than I do. But suffice it to say, this is something we're going to, you know, we're going to have to face. Yes, ma'am.
So what's the next step from this point on? What do you all do, and what should we do as far as moving forward with the tests that need to be done in that area? Or,
well, I'm sure that the developer has to jump through hoops.
The developers follow the multiple applications in regards to different processes with soils testing, septic, floodplain, building construction. So right now it's involved in multiple administrative processes.
But what about the idea of using the developer's engineering assessment of things versus asking the state to help us? The same way when they were looking at Hogshead Creek Bridge, there were state assessments of that land.
For 4 years.
Can we say that we want that instead of saying it's okay to use the developer's own engineering reports?
Well, we're constrained by what the ordinance requirements are, so we don't have a mechanism to require third party review in the floodplain ordinance.
Could we
that would be a private transaction between you and the developer, but the county has no mechanism to make that a requirement.
But if I'm not mistaken, just to speak to the folks that are here, their plans are public. We have public access to the plans.
Yes,
means that if we had a second plan, we could go in, pull up on public access what their plans were, and compare the two plans as to whether or not the reality of will their plan cut the mustard or not, according to our expert.
Yeah, the plan.
And then you take it to court, and your expert testifies, and his expert testifies.
That would be the.
Yeah, that'd be what we're
doing. But the next part of that is how much do they want to stay in the game before they go, leave this game, let's just move it on?
Yes.
And how long? Well, we don't know that.
Yeah. I think we'll stay a good while.
And I mean, that's the question. That's not being smart. That's just the question.
I know. We do have a legal representative now.
And so you see it every day in the trial.
Right.
One side's got an expert, and one side's got an expert.
Yeah.
Which one is more believable?
I agree.
But then again, too, your plan would not be binding on the existing regulations.
Right.
You see, what you could do is you could force them to prove that their footprint will not put water over the highway.
That's what I said. They should have to prove that.
Well, you could sue them to prove it.
You see what I'm saying? Well, they could not prove that their footprint
will not put water over that highway.
Make them prove that it won't.
And that's what I'm saying. If we create enough of that,
you'll cost them more money than what
they'll leave.
Yeah. Bottom line is, I'd start with the health department.
We already have.
If they're bold enough to spend money to overcome that, because I'm a builder, and they cannot build the Dollar General there with a septic. They'll bring in dirt and they'll raise up the foundation to be able to overcome the health department, which they're paying money all the time. You go in there and I could probably do it. You go in there and do a cross-section survey, they'll overcome that. They're going to spend three times the money. But as Carol Parker mentioned, thinking about the future here, like, I'm against Dollar General box stores. Okay, you got my vote. So think about the future. They're just going to go on down to some fringe area where they can do it.
Except if we set in motion.
So it might not be your community, it might be mine. Mm-hmm. I've got
a
farm.
It be your community either.
Right. Huh?
But all we can do is fight for one battle at a time.
Right.
We know that it's a bigger war to fight, but we can only fight one battle at a time.
Okay.
And if we can win this one, we can arm the next community with the same forces that we brought to bear,
right,
and help them win their battle too.
If the situation is similar.
I'm a builder, I'm against
it. If it's similar. Yeah. Our advantage is the flood zone.
Jason, you said that there's no regulation for a third party in the current flood ordinance, the flood damage ordinance, but there is leeway in there to reach out to a third party, correct?
What exactly are you, what section are you referring to?
I would say we
don't have a mechanism in the ordinance to require them to submit a third-party engineering review independent of their own engineering.
Right, but I mean, we can reach for more help than just internally.
Yes, we have our state representatives and...
Right, and that's what, yeah, yes. I know that to help them here.
Correct. We work very closely with our state representatives who handle flood issues.
At this point, we really need to move on with our meeting. This was a 15-minute discussion. Anyway. So we will not be discussing this issue tonight, but you're more than welcome to check online. We're where you are, but we have to move on. So if you don't want to sit here for another hour.
If you want to check out online, what is your website?
Oh, they're Transylvania County, and you just go to the planning department, and you'll see, what's going on. Thank you. You're welcome. Pardon me?
Down a little
ways. Yeah, it's down a little ways if you...
Stay about 15 minutes.
More than welcome. It's tonight.
Stay about 15 minutes.
15 minutes? Yeah. See if I can have a smaller time. Okay. Approval of agenda.
I move we approve the agenda as presented.
Second. Lauren seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Approval of minutes from our November meeting. Has everybody had a chance to look at them? Okay. Do we have a motion to approve on November's agenda? Okay, Don. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Feature seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Subdivision approvals and updates. Kate.
There were 22 in total last month. There were two lot subdivisions. We did have one conservation easement. It was just for review. A property owner was putting some property adjacent to the river into a conservation easement. There were 9 changing of boundary lines subdivisions, 4 in combinations, 2 family subdivisions, 3 that were greater than 10 acres, and then 1 that was just a review boundary survey.
Okay, which one was the conservation easement?
It's a property up 281 north of Lake Topsway. It's the first one at Troy Owen Farm.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Christmas tree farm, I believe.
Okay. Any other questions?
Well, there's a farm, yeah.
Okay.
I was just asking before the meeting started, this is just purely informational for us, correct?
Yeah.
We have no say in this. This is just...
Occasionally, subdivisions will come to you all for approval, but they're more more sophisticated. They require planning board approval.
But when we get these, it's just information.
A lot of these are just exemptions and family subdivisions and two-lot subdivisions.
Okay. All right. Moving on to old business, noise ordinance.
Madam Chair, we have the county has been under contract with a new legal representation, and they've had some comments in regards to our noise ordinance, and we thought that would be a good idea for the planning board to hear those comments, so we plan on making a conference call with Natalia Isenberg, who's a partner at T. Campbell, and they're out of Raleigh.
Okay.
So we'll be calling her in just a second and getting her comments for you all to hear.
This is the new attorney.
Yes.
When are we meeting with the county commissioners about the noise ordinance?
I don't. It'll be the earliest. Will be January at this point.
I'll be there. I'm a public investigator.
The one that got sent out the other day is the most current one.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's it. 10-17. Hey, Natalia, this is Jason. I'm getting ready to put you on speakerphone. All right. Natalia, can you hear us yet?
Yes, I can hear you. Hello, everyone.
Howdy.
I was just explaining that you all are representing the county now as far as legal matters, and you had some comments in regards to our noise ordinance that has been under review for the past 11 or 12 months or so.
Yes, thank you, Jason. So I've had an opportunity to review the noise ordinance. I've shared my thoughts with Jason. I think that overall the changes to the ordinance are an improvement to the prior version, and I really commend the county for putting together that language. I made a few suggestions, which I'm happy to go through, but essentially what I suggested that be done is there be some additional language to essentially make the noise ordinance a little bit clearer, and to also make it so that an enforcement officer who has to make a determination as to whether or not the noise ordinance has been violated has some clear language and some methods for doing so that weren't previously in there. For example, I proposed including a paragraph that permits, in certain circumstances, a law enforcement officer can determine there's been a violation if you have multiple people who don't live in the same on the same property, or live in two different properties. Each of them submit a complaint about noise level, and the investigating officer makes his own determination that is a disturbing noise, then that's sufficient to establish a prima facie case. I also suggest that we add some language to account for due process.
Do we have those
in the event a civil penalty is issued? No. And you, I I think the changes that I suggested are pretty clear, but the county may review them and may have some additional questions, which I'm happy to help with.
Can we get a written version of those changes for the planning board?
Yes, I actually just emailed it to you, and you may not have your computer with you,
okay.
But I went ahead and emailed that before I got on the call. So
okay.
If you're not, I don't know if you're able to access that.
I can get that to the members. I just wanted them to be able to review it for next time.
Yes. Yes, I sent it. I actually just submitted it, and I'm happy to discuss again. You know, once you all have had a chance to review the suggestions, I can be available to discuss it further.
What were the major points, Natalia? You're talking about making it easier on law enforcement. And clarity. Was there wasn't any substantial changes? I guess is what I'm getting at. But just more of a
and what I was trying to express is that I actually think the changes that the county had made before I reviewed it satisfied that. I think that the changes that the county was making were going to make it easier. And for example, I think there was a section. I made some tweaks to it. Like, for example, there's a section about where sound measurements shall be taken, and I suggested that we change that to measuring the sound at the property line that's closest to the source of the offending noise. I think the way it was worded before was, you know, just to kind of make it a little bit clearer. And just some of it is of, you know, wording of the ordinance, just to make it, you know, a little clearer about what level of offending noise and, you know, when is that exceeding the level and between which hours. I didn't know if the planning board wanted to consider, I saw that there was some sections that were deleted about construction operations, and I put some suggested language, you know, to the extent that they want to make equipment that's used for construction, if they want to make sure that that's not something that's going to be considered a violation, presuming that it's done in, you know, in performance with standard manufacturer's suggestions. You know, for example, like there was one provision that said noise is resulting from any authorized emergency vehicle, and I believe it said in responding to an emergency, and I think that if it's a noise, if the authorized emergency vehicle is emitting a noise, then that's going to be within, you know, their authorized use. So just to kind of make it a little clearer, let's see. Let's go through here.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
If I heard you right, you were saying that you were suggesting changing where the measurement's taking to the property line, and we had lots of discussion over that, and I don't know how familiar you are with our county, but we as a board felt the problem with that is it creates a gray area and makes it harder to have a conviction on a noise ordinance violation. Because that would require the enforcement officer to know where the property line is and to get to that property line. And in so many instances in our county, it would basically be impossible. And so then, you know, let's say I am the offender having the offending noise, I feel like I could easily get out of that by saying that the officer was not standing at the property line. And I think he would have a really hard time convincing the court that he was at the property line and that he knew where the property line was. And in so many instances, you can't even get to the property line. It's just too steep and rugged. So that's why we chose the term curtilage instead of property line.
Okay.
well said.
Did you choose the curtilage that it be closest to the source of the offending noise?
The curtilage
of the property?
Yes, that's what it says now.
We were advised to this also. I fully appreciate you wanting this to be more user-friendly to the enforcers of this ordinance. And the sheriff's department is the one that came out and spoke directly to this, and he wanted us to use the term curtilage. And then, so any part of the curtilage, it could be a farm that has barns all over the farm and, gazebos by the lake, and any of that that is commonly used area, which is basically a simple definition of curtilage, the enforcement officer could take that reading from any of those places that are considered curtilage.
I see. Well, I thank you for clarifying those additional facts, and I certainly. And I would agree with that statement that in light of those considerations, that would be something that should be included. As I mentioned, some of the suggestions are suggestions, but I also included, let me see here, there was a provision about that someone had to knowingly permit the noise in the section of the noise is prohibited, and so that one thing I think the county should consider is whether that language is actually necessary. I think that including that language might be interpreted to mean that there needs to be like a mens rea element, in order to establish that. And I don't think that's necessary, given that there is a provision for warnings to be issued, and there's a process in place for people who are notified that they're in violation of the noise ordinance that they can comply with it. So that was a section that I thought would provide more clarity if it was removed. But overall, I thought that the way it was drafted as presented to me was very good and sufficient. And I really just added, a few words here and there, which I thought would be, make it a little easier to understand. But overall, I thought it was very well put together, and I think I could tell that you all put a lot of time and thought and effort into it.
Natalia, as far as next steps, would it be appropriate for the planning board to revisit these comments and then amend their recommendations to the Board of Commissioners based upon the comments that we're receiving from you all? And
yes, and I think the planning board should review the comments that that I included and make, as you review those comments, if there's some suggestions that I inserted, which, based on, your long experience with, how this ordinance has been applied in the past, and you review it and you think, well, actually, I don't think that suggestion would work for our county, then, certainly don't. I'm not stating that you must accept every suggestion. The suggestions that I do think are important, I do think it's important that there be a provision for an appellate process for the portion of the ordinance that provides that a law enforcement officer can issue a civil penalty, like without a criminal proceeding, just a civil penalty. And then I think there should be a provision in there that a citizen can appeal that civil penalty. I think that's something that's important for the county to have. But other than that, I'm suggesting ways to make it either read better or clearer. But the substantive portions of it, I think overall, were in good shape. Does that make sense?
So we'll take these comments that you sent to us tonight, and we'll review those, and then we will reach out to you if any questions in the meantime, but then we'll revisit this at the next meeting.
Sounds good.
All right. Does anybody else have any questions for Natalia?
No, I don't.
Yeah, in other words, when she sends the changes, highlight them in red or some color so that we can finally get
Correct.
This thing done.
Right.
I submitted the changes. I highlighted my changes in yellow.
That's good enough.
No, that's good enough. Just so,
so that it would be easy, so that it would be easy to see. And then I, please take a look, and to the extent it's not clear, let me know. But I highlighted the words that I added in yellow.
Anybody else have any other questions? Well, thank you for your time, and we'll be in touch.
Absolutely, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Okay. I turned it too hard.
James, I want to know how much she bills for that.
Yeah, I'd like to know that too.
That's our new county attorney?
Oh, Raleigh. Yeah,
it's a firm in Raleigh that's representing the county.
Oh. So we no longer have a local attorney here that.
Oh, she's right. So she's from that.
What is there. I'd love to know.
Misty resigned and left, and they had to get somebody else.
Oh, she resigned.
So is this a short-term thing? Are we looking to fill that position with a local person that would be here, or no?
I think it's it's more short-term for now, I think. Yeah, that's my understanding.
So we don't... No, I'm going to have to continuously... I'm from Raleigh, and I'm here to help.
Well, I was in the meeting when this was done. I was sitting right out there. And there was discussion about why didn't we hire a local attorney and that sort of thing.
Sorry.
And it was kind of just said,
There was a replacement because she works for VSS. Because that's where Misty was spending 99.9% of her time anyway.
Yeah.
So that's that. They just assigned that lawyer to that part.
Okay.
So then this was the
Misty is going
to the front of the commissioners. So they did make that decision to hire outside.
Yeah.
And
so
she is, they have a second branch in Asheville, which is where she's from.
Okay, so she
lives
in
Asheville. Okay, well that goes.
Our Raleigh is somewhere that we all stay.
But you know, I would like to see us finally get these changes, because we know we've been dealing with this for a year, and it would be good to finally get a final copy so that the commissioners know what we send to them is the final copy. Now, how many copies are we going to keep sending to the commissioners?
I think we only sent one, right?
Since I've been here, we've sent two of them.
We started on this last year sometime.
My understanding, she said none of them were like, you can't legally have this in there. They were just suggested.
Right.
Yes.
And
we can look at her things next meeting, vote on it, whether we like her changes or not. But I didn't get the drift that she said you legally can't put that in there.
She said there's not really any substantive changes. It's more...
Just suggestions.
Right. We don't have to accept each one that
okay.
she suggested.
Got it. So we'll look at it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Old business. Cedar Mountain Small Area Plan.
We don't really have an update for this month because there is no meeting this month. But the next meeting will be January 28th at the Cedar Mountain Community Center at 6 p.m.
Okay.
So January 28th at 6?
Yes.
January 28th, what time?
6 p.m.
6. Out there
at the Cedar Mountain Community Center.
Okay. They have welcomed us to listen to their process.
I'd love it.
With minimal input, because they're putting their plan together, but they'll occasionally ask us some questions if we're present. And maybe that's guidance. But it's still their process.
Right. We need to be careful about what we input, I think. And if they ask for questions, we answer them, but we need to be careful about telling them what to do. Because it's their process, and they got to come back to us, so we're going to see all this again.
Right.
Right.
And it has to go to the commissioners. points all along the way. All right, new business, an overview of the planning department's related ordinances.
Yes, so I just wanted to go over the basics of what we do look at in the planning department and run through what zoning is, basically, for since we have very little of it in the county. As far as the planning department, we do administer the floodplain ordinance, subdivision ordinance. We do have a small area of the county with zoning in Pisgah Forest. We do telecommunications towers. We do mountain range protection. So we don't have a comprehensive zoning ordinance in the county, but we do administer some ordinances that are typical of most localities in the state. As far as zoning, I just want to emphasize that zoning is a tool used by some local governments to guide development by predetermining acceptable types of uses on properties as well as factors such as landscaping, minimum required parking, etc. And they are intended to protect public health and safety. And that's the key word, protecting public health and safety. That's the basis for a zoning ordinance. Again, a map of parcels is developed reflecting zones, allowing a different selection of uses along with a code describing uses and minimum standards. And zoning case law includes a number of Supreme Court cases that cite the Constitution both around government takings and discriminations. And that's the issue zoning hinges upon is the word takings and discrimination. Zoning cannot prohibit any uses. If a property owner is so restricted that they cannot reasonably use their property, the courts have upheld that it is a taking. And the government imposing the regulation must either allow usage of the property or pay the property owner compensation for the loss of use. So there's a balancing act that has to take place between regulation and what's considered a taking. And zoning cannot prohibit a specific business or specify ownership of the business. For instance, retail is all retail, corporate or locally owned. You can't make that distinction. If the zoning code allows retail up to a certain square footage and size, the code cannot dictate further without being discriminatory. So you can't mix and match, so to speak. Just based on whether you like the business owner or not.
Are these state laws, state zoning laws?
This is how zoning is administered in North Carolina, but there's a lot of federal cases as well in regards to discrimination that would come into play.
Okay.
So it would be state and federal. But okay. The enabling legislation is North Carolina. Zoning regulations cannot apply retroactively. Existing uses are grandfathered in, considered what we call non-conforming. And any projects already begun do not have to abide by the newly adopted regulations. So if regulations were put in place, they can't retroactively apply to something that's already in the pipeline. A local government that does not have zoning regulations cannot coerce or pressure a property owner to change the use or development plans, especially when other regulations such as building codes or environmental health are being carried out by the local government. Such action could be seen as discriminatory and misusing the authority of local government. One factor in zoning regulation to consider is that property taxes fund local government. If a property tax rolls are too far skewed to residential, the burden of services is more heavily on the residential property owners. If the property tax rolls skew commercial or industrial, there may be problems with workforce availability. Quality community planning requires carefully balancing many different community needs, and that's the gist of the issue is that each community must find its own individual balance of what they value, what they see as important, and choose the appropriate regulations, if any, to guide the growth to where they want to guide it and keep it away from where they want to keep it away from. And that's just a primer, and we do have a training video. That's the next item on the agenda.
Yeah.
Jason, can we get a copy of this?
Yes, I can send it to you.
That'd be great. Thanks.
And this was presented at the Board of Commissioners meeting last time by our county manager. I just wanted to...
Yeah.
Can you print them out? Maybe?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'll get them to you all. So the next item on the agenda, we do have a just a basic training video from UNC School of Government, Introduction to Land Use Decisions. I thought this was a good time, that since we had many new members on the planning board, just to go through some of the items that could come into play, potentially could come into play. We don't necessarily have all these ordinances, but it is something for you all to think about and just educate yourself on, and how things work and what we're allowed to do in the state of North Carolina.
Will this count towards our credit hours for Con Ed?
I believe it would, because it's through the UNC School of Government.
Okay.
Welcome to this introduction to Land Development Regulation Module. My name is Adam Lovelady, and I am an assistant professor of public law and government here at the School of Government. This is the first in a series of modules detailing the types of land use decisions that you may encounter in North Carolina. To navigate through this module, you can use the left-hand navigation or the play bar that appears below. This module provides an overview of the different types of land use decisions in North Carolina. After completing this module, you will understand the basic framework for land development regulation and appreciate the distinct procedural requirements. In order to bring these concepts to life, we will follow Joe, an aspiring developer, as he attempts to develop land in the fictitious town of Normalton, North Carolina. First, we take a look at how communities like Normalton plan for future development and implement that plan through ordinances, specifically zoning and subdivision ordinances. Next, we watch Joe as he seeks a legislative rezoning, focusing on the procedures that accompany this type of land use decision. Then, we will see the distinct procedural requirements of quasi-judicial decisions, like Joe's conditional use permit. Finally, we will see if Normalton will approve Joe's request to subdivide his land. This module is the introduction for a series of modules on land development regulation. Many of the topics discussed here are covered in more detail in other modules. Before we get going, it is helpful to clearly distinguish the different types of decisions in land development regulation. Legislative decisions, like rezoning, were made by the governing board. Quasi-judicial decisions, like variance or special use permit, are typically made by the Board of Adjustment. Advisory decisions, like recommendation or rezoning, those are made by the planning board. And administrative decisions, like approval of a routine permit or issuing a notice of violation, those are made by staff. These different types of decisions serve different purposes and have different procedural requirements. This is especially true when a board makes different types of decisions. Consider a town council, for example. It makes a legislative decision when it adopts an ordinance meeting, but it makes a quasi-judicial decision when it approves the condition of the ordinance meeting. Let's now meet Joe and learn more about him. He is a resident of Normalton, North Carolina, and he has a vision. He purchased an old farm on the edge of town, on one side of the highway, where there are currently woods and a creek. He envisions a residential neighborhood. They call it the Home of Old Forest Creek. Across the highway, he sees a shop. Although it would be nothing like a village, and although there won't be a farm there, they call the shopping center of the village at one step on. Joe thinks he can clear the land, throw up some buildings, and sell off both developments in their town. Joe also figures this is a win-win. This section will explore the basics of comprehensive planning and implementation for zoning and zoning. Normalton's experience with building regulations goes back a ways. They first adopted zoning decades ago. About 10 years ago, the town updated its comprehensive plan. As is typical, the Normalton Planning Board, with help from town staff, arranged a series of community meetings and then put together a plan for how the town approached it.
The public wanted to encourage John Craig while still preserving the small town qualities made home for my family. This comprehensive plan talked about things like attracting jobs and industry and wide public investments in roads and sewers. And it identified areas of prime future development and valuable natural areas of farmland, spring, and business. The planning board recommended approval of the comprehensive plan and advisory decisions. And after additional review by a region of its own, the town council adopted the updated comprehensive plan. In addition to identifying what uses are appropriate in the industry, the zoning ordinance also specifies dimensional aspects of development, such as lot size, the size of yards, the height and size of buildings, and landscape buffers, as shown in these images from Raleigh's Unified Building Board. The zoning ordinance is closely related to the land subdivision ordinance. Indeed, some communities combine them into a unified development ordinance. Nevertheless, the authority for land subdivision regulation is distinct from the authority for zoning. The subdivision ordinance outlines the process and approvals for dividing a parcel of land into smaller lots and sets forth standards for things like lot size, road construction, and adequate infrastructure. This is an example from Winston-Salem of a subdivision plat, the document used to formally divide. Okay, so there's a comprehensive plan and these ordinances. So how do they relate? First, the governing board may adopt new zoning and subdivision standards to align with the goals set forth in the comprehensive plan. Also, when town council makes a decision about rezoning property or changing the zoning ordinance, they must adopt a consistency statement, language to state whether the action is consistent with the comprehensive plan and why the action is reasonable and in the public interest. It is worth emphasizing the council must look at the plan and consider it, but the plan is not binding on their legislative decision. Moreover, the standards for conditional use permits and conditional rezonings often require consistency with comprehensive plans for approval. Now it's time for a question. So consider this, is it true or false? A comprehensive plan is a vision for future development in the community and by itself has the force of law. When you are ready, select the continue button on the slide. On the next slide, select the correct answer and then click the submit button to receive feedback.
Anyone want to guess?
False.
That's true.
It is?
Correct answer is false. While a comprehensive plan is a vision for future development, the community does have the force of law. The goal of the comprehensive plan are implemented through zoning and subdivision ordinances.
You may continue with the module by selecting continue on your screen. Now let's get back to Joe. Back when Normalton was working on the comprehensive plan, Joe didn't pay much attention. But now that he is trying to develop property, he is keenly interested in what he can and can't do. After talking with the town planning staff, Joe has learned that he can't simply clear land, build buildings, and sell all lots. All of his property is zoned for R1, or low-density residential development. In Normalton, the R1 district permits large lot residential uses. Additionally, an owner may establish smaller lot residences if the owner meets specific conditions and obtains a conditional use permit from the Board of Adjustment. The R1 district does not permit shopping centers like the Village. He needs a rezoning, an amendment to the zoning map, so his property is zoned to a district that permits shopping centers. A rezoning is a legislative decision by the town council. So Joe has applied for a rezoning for the Village Shopping Center, changing that side of the property from the R1 zone to the Commercial Highway zone.
The purpose of a legislative decision is to set town policy that the town council sees fit, based on public opinion and council discretion. So town council members may discuss the project with applicants outside of the hearing, seek public opinion, and make a determination based on what they view as best for the town. Amendments to the zoning ordinance and rezonings are legislative decisions. Part of the process of gaining public input is the recommendation from the planning board. State law requires that the planning board must review a proposed rezoning and make a recommendation before the application goes to the town council's public hearing. Ever the optimist, Joe figured that the planning board meeting would be a breeze. It was not. Neighbors came out to complain about the noise and traffic that Joe's development would cause. Staff noted that the rezoning is not consistent with the comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan identified the area as appropriate for low-density residential because of limited roads and limited water and sewer capacity. After some discussion, the planning board provided their advisory decision. They recommended for the town council to deny Joe's rezoning. With that, Joe's project was placed on the agenda for a public hearing at the next town council meeting. In advance of the town council meeting, the town planning staff provide proper notice for the public hearing for Joe's rezoning. They publish notice in the local newspaper. They mail notice to neighbors that may be affected. And they post a sign on Joe's property that folks driving by will know that a change is proposed. During a rezoning, the town council has several things that they can and cannot consider when making a decision. Let's begin with the things that they can consider. The town council may consider impacts on the owner, neighbors, and public, consistency with all applicable plans and policies, and consistency with prior and future decisions. Although town council has significant discretion in making legislative land use decisions, it is not unlimited discretion. Federal and state law have identified certain categories that council may not consider. To put it simply, land use decisions must focus on the specific proposed land use and its impact. The decisions should not consider who is applying for the approval. Those factors include ethnicity, income, or the character of the residents, ownership status, or whether the property will be owner-occupied or tenant-occupied. Additionally, a rezoning must consider the standards of the proposed zoning district. For standard rezoning, town council can't enforce additional conditions unless some form of conditional zoning is used. Question time again. Consider this. Given the bad outcome at the planning board meeting, Joe is determined to overcome the neighbor opposition. He has taken several steps to garner support for his project. Which of these is inappropriate for a legislative decision process? First, he met one town council member at the project site to explain the project to him. Then, he arranged for a couple of friendly neighbors to speak in favor of the project at the public hearing. They do not have any particular expertise, but will merely provide their opinion about the merits of the project. And finally, he offered specific conditions for his standard rezoning. He promised to develop only the shopping center use, even though the district permits many other uses. Delivery trucks will not travel on local roads. And Joe promised he will plant additional trees and shrubs as a buffer from neighboring properties. On the next slide, you'll be asked to answer the question, which of these is inappropriate for a legislative decision process?
Anybody have a guess?
I would arrange for an A.
I'd say.
What's that?
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay.
I don't think it is necessary in private ones. They hold up to it at the meeting and let everybody know. Just like on the board of adjustment meeting, if you make a site visit, you have to let the board know that you have made a site visit. And a lot of times you'll run into people that will talk to you about it. And as long as you let that be known at the meeting, it's not inappropriate.
So you're right.
Yeah, that's the biggest difference between the state I came from in Virginia and here is that in Virginia we do allow proper conditions by the applicant, and here it's kind of seems like it's they're more restrictive on that. So conditions may not be applied to standard rezoning actions. Where you know in Virginia we did a set propers. And you may be one of the few states that do a set propers, but it's...
What do you say? A set?
A set propers. We call it a proper condition. And essentially what that is it's in Virginia it's considered voluntary, but it really became voluntary in a lot of ways. And so the development community kept going back to the state legislature to put more restrictions on how staff and... our planning commissioners and our board, county boards handle propers, and essentially we were not able to, for the past couple of years, we weren't even able to mention propers, proper conditions. They had to come to us voluntarily. So it became strictly voluntary where they were trying to anticipate what might meet the muster with the county board to get approved. And mitigate some of the negative perceived impacts by the community.
You may continue with the module by selecting Continue on your screen. If you would like to review your answers, you may do so by first selecting the Review Quiz button and then selecting the Next Slide button from your play bar to continue with the module. Despite his best intentions, Joe's rezoning was denied. In the end, the neighbors and comprehensive plan won.
So I feel like every day.
After all the headaches from the rezoning, Joe is not sure he even wants to ask about his residential development, the homes at Old Fourth Street. He recalls that staff told him he will need to go through something called a quasi-judicial process to get something called a special use permit. Joe is weird, but still hopeful. So give it a shot. As we saw with Joe's rezoning, in a legislative decision, town council is seeking out public opinion. Councilors may meet with Joe or the neighbors outside the public hearing, and they are making a decision to set a policy, changing the zoning district. Quasi-judicial decisions are different. The purpose of a quasi-judicial decision is to apply standards that are already set. A quasi-judicial decision is more like a court case. It involves a detailed review of the facts of the case.
You have to be mindful of the public meeting requirements and what's considered a public meeting.
Can't it meet? It has to be done in the hearing. No expert take. No conflict.
It's like we lost the sound somehow. Idea of that.
That doesn't do it.
I'm sure I'm going to have this expected to find this back after 20. I think I've got some.
People have been watching each other like that.
Is this something you can email?
It's online, and we did pay for the all the courses, so we could you all be able to do it.
Grow all the. We can't get this to work. It's interesting. It's not worth it.
Rick's enjoying.
At least it used to be, you got to go to Montreat, have lunch with Tommy Burleson, talk basketball all the way.
Why are we stopped?
The sound.
The sound's gone down the river.
So this is the question, and maybe get the following. Emailed the board members, gave testimony at a hearing about why the project does not comply with the standards, and gave testimony at a hearing about why the homes will be ugly and awful in his opinion, which was a set over opinion, right?
The testimony about why it didn't apply.
The correct answer is the parties may appear at the quasi-judicial hearing to provide sworn testimony regarding whether or not the proposal meets the standards for the conditional use permit. Quasi-judicial proceedings seek quality of evidence, not general opinion. So email calls and conversations and other communications outside of the quasi-judicial hearing are ex parte communications, which are not allowed.
Otherwise, that kind of violates that open meetings concept, doesn't it?
In a way, it's more of a you're more of a considered a judicial. You're morphing more into a judicial role as opposed to a legislative role.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you're making a recommendation on a rezoning, some of that communication is fine. But if you're in a more formal judicial setting, it's not fine. You need to be careful of who you interact with.
And then doesn't the applicant have an extension for about 30 days to appeal to the Superior Court? And does the appeal still go straight to Superior Court after 30 days? Okay,
that's my understanding. So
it's recently. I only had to do four one time.
So local governments regulate land subdivision to promote orderly growth, ensure adequate infrastructure, and establish good land records and protect the interests of future purchasers.
Noise
coming somewhere. I had to turn on
the computer. Oh, you got it on your computer. I was like, something just started working.
So you have, as far as the procedures, you have a preliminary plat review. This is kind of the initial review where we're giving a review before we final approval. The final plat review ensures that development maintains substantial performance with the approved preliminary plat. The final plat is what's recorded at the county register of deeds. This is just going over what could be shown on a subdivision plat and what can be dedicated. And of course, there's certain fees that may be collected as far as streets, utilities, parks, etc. Or if land is reserved for a particular use, like open space. So this is just talking about administrative approval of plat. That's typically granted to the planning director or his designee. And some localities have a technical review committee where different agencies such as building, planning, health department get together and discuss the subdivision plat. And basically this question is asking what would be appropriate for that committee to discuss. For example, if there's upset neighbors, you keep in mind that the venue for technical review committee is technical. They don't deviate from discussions as it relates to they don't deviate too far away from what the technical requirements of the ordinance are. Either it meets those requirements or it doesn't. So, with that in mind. What would you all say would be the answer to this question?
A.
Correct. The administrative decisions approval must be given if the applicant meets the standards set forth in the ordinance, regardless of neighbor opposition. In this example, the town's preliminary plat approval is administrative and conditions may not be applied. Some jurisdictions have quasi-judicial subdivision approvals, but conditions are typically limited to those that bring the plat into compliance with the technical standards. So basically, either your plat complies with the standards or it doesn't. That's basically it for this video. I thought it was just a good basic video on how land use works in the state.
Now, this video did put emphasis on planning for future conditions. There were people out here tonight that were talking about future conditions if this Dollar General store went in and that part of the floodplain was displaced and something else goes in and another part of the floodplain is dismissed. How much future can we look at? FEMA only gives the base flood elevation of the floodway and all that because they don't know what the future is going to bring. So how can we?
Well, I would say to that effect, you can't ignore the past. The past is what helps you plan for the future.
Yeah, you don't know where you're going,
so
you know where you've been.
We don't necessarily have all the data from the future that we need, but we can only make the best guess. And that's part of planning, is making those guesses and determinations as a community. What you think might come down the pipe of what might negatively impact the community and mitigating that as much as possible. And not every decision that's made is going to be the right one, but it's going to be the one with the best information you had from us as a staff and you all as a advisory body, and you know, coming together and putting our heads together and making, you know, a reasonable recommendation.
Something that's defensible that we can hang our hat on.
Correct. And what you think is the best route for the community at that time you have that information. And that's a challenge for any planning board or elected official is. You know, you don't know what the future is going to hold, but you're making the best guess you can with the relying on your staff, relying on your what you see as out in the community yourself, what you know about the community, and then making those decisions.
And see, that's just about like what FEMA does on these flood insurance rate maps. They have to assume the channel remains open all the time and does not become clogged. Where all bets are off on how high water.
And they forget about all the trees just followed in the last 20 years.
Yeah. So that's a good example, I guess.
You're right. It's lots of them.
Yeah.
You know, it's in cutting out the sand drains too made a big difference. Back when you said three sand drains, I wouldn't do it. And pretty sure things are slow to start to do it back.
Yeah, what was that? There's some place here, not too. I remember that the trees were bowling up and basically made a dam and they had to get in there.
That was out behind Andy Borges off Everett Road.
Yeah, right.
There, and then they had two different places they had to go in and reestablish the stream bank. But it changed the course of the river and washed out a confluence of one of that bridge.
I remember that.
That's not been that long ago.
That long ago.
Well, that was the big flood debris jam down there at Ken Allison's and what's his name? The insurance agent, Hooper.
Rich
Harold Hooper's place. Yeah.
One of my dogs telling me they're home.
You haven't had the whole damn river down there.
This was good training.
Yeah, I joined the sign the planning department up for these, have access to these modules. So we can probably find some more time later on for another, you know, as a group. Or we can, some of you all might want to watch some on your own just to educate yourself. And again, feel free to ask me any questions.
Sandy, during the quiet times, when there's not a lot of hubbub we're dealing with,
yeah,
we can go through one module in a meeting.
Yep. That was the plan tonight.
need to get
derailed.
They got derailed a little bit.
But it was proper that we heard all these people tonight.
Absolutely.
Now, it's always proper here.
Oh, yeah, I already got it done.
That's why you have 15 minutes, you get 3 minutes.
I mean, we're here to serve them.
But these people left here tonight with a good feeling that somebody listened to us.
Well, you know, you had so much information that I don't know if the rest of us know. You gave me some good information. Especially the septic. That septic has been concerned.
It was worth the time spent.
Well, they're not going to build a Dollar General there.
they won't pay three times as much for that. But Dollar General, they'll want to go, they'll pick somewhere else again.
Have you been on any sites where they put holding tanks and then pump them? Have you ever been involved in that?
Yes.
That, I mean, I know that's one of the strongholds is the septic permit, but they can put a big holding tank in and then pump
them. They could. We do that all the time for labor tension.
Yeah.
You know, I just spend a substantial amount of money just to keep the holding tank down. Without a plug, I mean, you got to put money into that.
Thing of prohibiting all big box stores and all that.
Well, I'm not saying what to do with box stores. You can't find the Walmart.
Yeah, I mean, what is it? Six?
If they want for every 5,000 residents in the county, they want a Dollar General. So that's what their goal is. Dollar General is that they do for any county that they enter. So they got this magic number of getting to seven, so they want to build one more, right?
Yeah, that seems to be their business model.
Yeah. So
I'm not trying to put anybody
in here. Mean heaven in this.
we've got one member of the public that's hung around, and I definitely am not trying to jeopardize his job. But I mean, it may probably help her. Yeah. You know, it's just us. I mean, one of my biggest concerns, and I don't know if there's I know there's something in there about, of course, that's in the floodplain ordinance, but, you know, as far as expense to county, there's no way you measure this and put money on it, but there's so much. It'd be interesting to know the percentage of items sold from a Dollar General that within 12 months end up in our landfill versus the percentage of items sold at more locally owned businesses. I'll just speak frankly.
The ability to just catch
junk,
that balance.
How much more junk store do we need? You know, I mean.
Well, there's a lot of crap sold that ends up in the landfill that maybe used once, twice, or looked at and thrown away.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about that.
And that's one of the big problems I have with it. I don't think you're going to run out of a job if that Dollar General doesn't show up. But
I don't think you typically shop at those places for the quality.
I don't think that's the worry. There'll always be plenty of stuff going to the landfill.
I can attest that some of their fans don't typically work very well, and they ended up in the landfill.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, you go there and buy a fan, and it's junk. You pay half the price for it, but in the end, they make it through a summer with a fan to cool you off. You spend the same amount of money because you have to buy two or three of them, of course, in the summer. And the ones that don't work end up in the landfill.
Right, there's this economic theory about the realities of buying an expensive pair of boots for $50 versus and keeping them for 20 years versus a cheap pair of boots for $10 you can buy every year. And the expensive boots, you cough them right in front, but they last longer and your feet are not wet. And if you buy cheap boots, like they wear out and your feet are always wet anyway. And so the question to me is not only is it Dollar General, but I mean, we can see what experience is coming into town now. And that's way outside of our jurisdiction, but my fear is every quarter coming in to the county could become a sprawl environment has become bigger and more popular. So whether it's a Dollar General or Dollar General in a lot of ways like a weed, it's the invasive, but it just opens the door for other things to come in. And I think in the long run, as the county gets bigger and we become more popular, where do we have to draw the line?
Well, for starters, can you draw the line?
Or can you draw the line?
Right.
I like Bob's point. You know, I can remember when Dad was telling me that it's like 55% of the county is owned by the, you know, the government. Now it's 67%. You know, so when you really break it down, there's not that much land for these people to build on. And they're going to pick on the farmers. They're going to pick on going for the cheap land. They just pick the absolute
very horrible spot.
That's part of it. Such a limited land available. Yeah. And it's,
we know what
it's
a good
there's spots in this county where they will
be available.
A lot of these people probably don't realize what acoustic is.
It's not economical for a farmer to
keep those things. Because you had so much informative in Clay Camp. When I was working out there, you had one little shirt factory that had 25 feet. And everybody else either went to Atlanta, worked there, or we came home on the weekend. Or the group go, fished illegally, hunted illegally, or ran liquor. That was it.
Jason. How would a corporate entity react when they know, like Dollar General store number 7, when they know it's not welcome?
From my experience, it does raise some red flags with corporate entities, but they also know with their information available that people are still going to shop there, and somehow they're going to make money, and their profitability is the biggest factor. So they bank on a certain percentage.
They understand that time people will get used to it, and there is not but so many times that the average person is going to drive by that store,
not going
out of mail, and they're never going to go anywhere. And I'm sure they use that. I don't know if I'm speaking as Bob said as a. You said at one point you're speaking not as a planning board member, but as a citizen. and I don't know which one I'm speaking. Probably more even as a planning board member. I think you know my view on it. It sounds like there's nothing we can do about this situation. It sounds like it's more in your hands as far as the planning director that approves his permit. And I would beg you as being part of your team to fine tooth comb the flood ordinance as much as you can, because it seems like I haven't heard anybody in our community come in and say, I want this Dollar General, we need this Dollar General. And so now I'm trying to speak for what I'm hearing our community say.
And times like this is when it highlights the weaknesses of what ordinances you do have and what they can be improved on.
I agree, and I'm ready to.
I think that is an advantage of this, is it shows the weak spots.
Yep.
And the other thing is with the Dollar General on Cedar Mountain, it really organized a huge group of people, and now they're like have a small area plan moving forward. Mm-hmm. And you think about the momentum that one store is providing for that community, you know, and in the long run, you know, Dollar General, that store is often closed because they can't find anyone to work there, and when it's open, it doesn't have inventory. So,
Constantly.
Yeah. And a matter of fact, when it's Rockaway is closed often too because they can't get staff to work there. So, you know, I don't know. Dollar General has a very specific spreadsheet somewhere that's a black and white cost analysis, and that is.
They have a business plan.
Yeah, and if I were Dollar General,
they follow it from hell or high water, apparently.
I mean, if it makes money if it's closed half the time and it still makes money, great.
Or if it stays open so many years and then they close up shop
and then you have an empty building.
I'm sure that
some corporate entities would react to it in full way or change the plan or do something, but
Dollar General is in this
Dollar General mansion
right now.
And I'm not sure they franchise some of their operations too, don't they?
I don't think they do.
I think it's mostly corporate. The Family Dollar, I know, does more franchise.
And like I read that they have some franchise operations that they're dual. And of course,
why don't you buy this one?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's what I'm getting. Is these people, if it's a franchise operation, chances are it's somebody local or somebody you could put more pressure on than you can a corporate.
This one's not.
I don't know what it is.
It's the difference in Virginia and North Carolina. a previous locality I worked in had a Family Dollar apply for a rezoning, and they're locally owned, but they franchised, and they did proper conditions on aesthetics. Because they not only were they local, they also wanted to make it more visually appealing to the community. And them being local help, you know, them understand what the community wanted to see. And Dollar General operates in a more corporate fashion. I think the corporate office is somewhere in Tennessee or Kentucky.
Personally, I'm not sure we need another Dollar General.
We got to.
Yeah.
I just hate to see loss of farmland. How much farmland are we going to keep losing and losing and losing?
There's farmland right across from the Dollar General.
And you know, I keep thinking of something that just rolls around in the back of my little deep brain here. Things are going to change. What is now has been before and will be again. Agriculture right now is kind of on the downslide in this county. But that doesn't mean that times won't come when agriculture becomes important. Agriculture, until just recently, was worth $21 billion to this county. That ain't nothing to sneeze at. It used to be more than that. But the small farm has been driven out by the corporate farm. So we're getting the short end of that stick over time. That's what's happening. And now, they're going to, you know, because of what you said, there's a finite fringe of land that's not too steep and doesn't flood, that everybody wants a piece of that action, including developers, for residential. And like I said, and I hope...
That's what's causing the strain, you know, better than anybody here. You know, the development up there, going up towards, you know, what is it, Foxway, you know, up there on the mountain. What's the development name?
I can't think of the name of it.
Anyway, I see the mud in the creek that runs through our farm. And it's coming from all the erosion and stuff from up there. You know, it's not from runoffs from the farms upstream or whatever. It's coming from that development. And they don't have, I mean, and I'm a builder. But, yeah, these residential, that's what you got to watch. Because they're going to buy out, and you're going to have more people moving here, and you're going to have more cookie-cutter type operation, you know, to make room for these people. And we got, it's going to be a, there's only so much, it boils down, there's only so much land to go around, because the government owns 67% of it.
And you know, Sandy, one of the things that isn't addressed in our flood ordinance is the fact that we're in an isothermic region where the average rainfall is 66 inches in Brevard, and less than 30 miles away at the Asheville Airport, the official NOAA station is 42 inches. Somehow or another, on the next revision of our floodplain ordinance, a provision needs to be put in that we live in a semi-rainforest. And up in your direction, gosh, you remember just a few years ago, Toxway had 120 inches of rain in a year. Mm-hmm. That's not normal. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's normal for us, but it's not normal 20 miles from here.
We didn't really flood where I am until all that runoff came from up there, and then we flooded.
There's only one area in the United States besides this area here that has more rainfall. That's the rainforest around Fort Lewis, Washington.
And that's been certified.
That's a known fact right there.
Keep in mind that this ordinance, the floodplain ordinance, is the state model. And you can go, strictly you can't go less than what the state requires you to do. But it can be within certain parameters tailored to a community.
When was the last update of it?
2009.
What's involved in updating an ordinance like that? Who has to initiate that?
Well, I know we're coming up on the Duger one. We're talking with Terry Fox, so that generally that type of stuff will come through the planning board. We probably get information from when the time comes, or we can initiate any time really. But
you say, yeah, I mean, you say when the time comes. Is there a set every 10 years or 12 years? I mean, I would initiate.
I don't think there's a set. I don't think there's a set time, but they do have. They occasionally they will tell you you have to update it, or you risk losing your FEMA insurance.
It seems to me like time, so. Flood maps were updated not too long ago.
No, 2009.
I can't remember.
That's 2009.
2009.
Yeah. So it's about every 10, 15 years is when they will come back with a recommended change. It's usually considered voluntary, but if you want to participate in the insurance program, you kind of have to change it to meet at least the minimum standards.
Another thing that impacts us here, we have a lot of people moving here. They've got to have some place to live. And if they're going to live here, they're going to want to be able to buy things here. So that means we're going to have growth now. Some way that's going to have to be accommodated.
Whereas all these, I mean, the younger people have got to work somewhere. And unless there's no more big plots of land, unless someone comes and buys out the land that where the Coosa used to. It'd be nice to convince somebody to come in and create jobs. You know?
Yes. Yeah, you know, I'm not opposed to.
But there is no more big blocks of land. Once someone turns that into a housing community, I agree. There's once that happens, there's no big industry that's coming.
But you got only about 150 some acres of that property is actually built, because the rest of it is Branson.
Yeah, that's
it's brownfield contamination.
Remember, can only clean up so much of it. Right.
Well, it's some of it will never be cleaned up. I mean,
the expenses is so high to clean it up.
Yeah, I mean, anything that's possible with the $100 million, and that'll be turned into the taxpayer dollars.
But see, when I was talking with Larry Chapman about that, he said roughly 137 to 150 acres of that 500 plus acre parcel, that all of these grandiose plans for the Renova Partners and the mixed use development, all that, that's all gone out the window, because nobody's going to take the liability and the responsibility of owning the brownfields.
See, that's what killed Renova, because they, prior to coming down here, they had cleaned up some hospital in Connecticut, Rhode Island, somewhere. They were horrendous brownfield applicants. They cleaned it up, made it, built housing and all like that. That was their plan down here until they realized what they were getting into. Yeah. And see, that landfill that the DOT just ripped the bridge across, that's not a certified fill right there. They just brought red clay in there, dumped it on top of it, and went on. It's not lying.
In the middle of the river, of all places.
Exactly.
And the river's not where it used to be. You know that.
The river got moved.
The river got moved.
So I know there's a lot, and those are all points of negatives. I know there are tons of jobs and industry and all that those two factories brought. There's lots of negatives too.
Well,
the brownfield. Here we are talking about the importance of land, and how we can't create land, and how important land is. Look at what a large, massive piece of land that they grew.
And look into the
future. Well, when that came in, there wasn't many considerations for any of that stuff.
It didn't matter whether they're considerations.
That was the way it was.
Like
man, look at the jobs we're getting.
Texting and killing somebody. I wouldn't consider killing somebody.
They came in and they had a lot of river up there. Took the bend out of it. That's straight shot down to the end there.
And that's not a good thing.
Increase the water volume. That's what all they were interested in.
Yeah.
I mean, there were things done that environmentalists nowadays would fall over dead if they saw
that. Yeah, that doesn't make
it. However, made a tremendous difference in this county.
But that bowl was left all over this county. East for Phil. When we first moved here, we lived in a duplex that later found out was built on that. Mm-hmm. And I'm convinced that's why every member of my family has had cancer. If that well being drilled down through that and using that well water for 2.5 years.
There's been many a gully in this county filled with fly ash from the goose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it was.
They used to mix it into garbage.
I don't have any updates aside from the fact that we've hired a full-time cleaner.
No, really, guys.
Miss Darby Terrell, who will start on January 13th.
T-U.
That's a T-E-R-R-E-L-L.
Are we ready to adjourn?
I have one thing. I would,
unless there's any more board comments you want to make.
Yeah, I don't know. I was at a planning board meeting, and I was out there as a public when a planning board date was changed, and I have no leg to stand on after my last month, and I won't personally say to everybody here that I'm so embarrassingly sorry that I just forgot about the meeting. But I will be out of the country January 14th. I don't want to miss another meeting. I don't want to get kicked off of this board for missing a meeting. I mean, I take a lot of pride in
That's
being involved
excuse,
in it.
That's a good excuse, John. Yeah.
I take a lot of pride in being involved in it, and I want to continue to be involved, but I realize missing another meeting is not a good thing. And
sometimes. Sometimes you're going to miss a meeting. World
well, I mean, yeah, I'm not asking for everybody to change it just on my behalf, but...
Can't. It's a joint meeting with the transportation
advisor. Oh, that one is. Okay. Yeah, so I can't.
Okay. We're going to their date.
Okay.
I don't have my calendar.
That'll be our meeting for January.
Oh, are we
yes,
doing
correct.
That? Okay, so what date is our next meeting?
January 14th.
Oh,
it's a joint meeting with TAC.
Oh, there it is. We're doing it early.
The January 28th was for the
Cedar Mountain.
Do we have to be there?
No.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Bob, you live there.
Yeah, I go to Cedar Mountain this year. But I try not to influence anything. I try to let them do their thing.
Oh, I'm just kidding. I've never had an influence on anything, right?
You know, she's like, yeah, oh,
what do you think?
He talks and then they say, well, so-and-so, and they're just like, he never said anything.
I really have to be careful about that.
Does anybody have any more comments?
We do need to be careful about influencing that too much. Let them do their thing, because they're going to come back to us.
I have something I want to say.
Okay.
Considering the fact that our next meeting is going to be a joint meeting with the Transportation Advisory Board, I am not going to reapply to be on this board. I've discussed it with my family. There's just a lot of stuff going on. I hate that I can't do this. I really do. I have loved all 3 years. I really have. I think you all know that I have. And even though, you know, just Lauren and, you know, and me, we came on together. And you all knew that you're going to do a great job. And somebody else will need to, you know, I've been doing this since May, no, maybe not a long time, but I will miss you guys,
yeah.
Too. I will. I'll probably be sitting out there sometimes.
Please, yeah. We are like quasi member.
Yes, we are.
Never mind, it's focused.
Sandy, you have brought not a civility, but a calmness to these meetings.
You
and
think
it
that's
showed
me?
Tonight out here.
Well, thank you. for saying that.
I don't know.
I don't necessarily feel that way, but
I can certainly endorse that. I saw some other meetings in this board.
Well, yeah, before we came on.
Before we came on.
It did.
This has been for 3 years just a wonderful group to work with. There really has been very little arguments we talked about.
When do you actually go
in a civil manner?
When do you actually go
on? January is my last meeting. Yeah. Did I tell you anything? No, I didn't know last month. I really just had to think about this month. Tricia knows, so the board knows.
So next month would be theoretically then the last meeting you want to.
I don't know if we can do that.
Probably don't.
Does Trish know that?
She does. She's known for a couple of months. She probably said something to you, did she?
I noticed it when she sent an email that people
would
be appointments.
Okay. Yeah. But I still wasn't sure. I could always change my mind.
So Jason, the interim chair, until we get a new chair?
Well, you guys will vote on it in February?
In February, maybe.
But now the commissioners will have to fill your position with an appointee.
Mm-hmm. I think they have a lot of applications, don't they?
They have 11 people for 3 positions. I know that.
The last time.
Well, that's...
I guess we mostly get
the members we have currently.
This is one of the most pleasurable boards that I've ever worked with. I mean, everybody here is so open and able to put their comments out, and then we make a decision on common sense and good vibes. And that means a lot.
We come prepared too. You do your homework. I see that, and you know John and all of you. I shouldn't name names.
Well, it is.
We look over. Yeah.
We appreciate you taking time out from your family to come to these meetings for the past 3 years. I know it's.
There's some issues with my family. Yeah.
Serving the county and all that, and certainly understand. Okay. But we appreciate what you've done.
If there's no further discussion, can I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Lauren. Seconded by Bob. All in favor?
Aye. Now that the meeting is adjourned, I wish to announce that I am a candidate for the Board of Education.
Oh.
Yes.
And I would be pleased to give you my card.
Oh, yeah. You be careful not to politic during the meeting.